was a moment of silence, but in that silence, I'm going to fill it with some observations and perhaps a little bit of analysis on what I think has happened. Who died? Well, a lot of people have died. In fact, it's not just about one person. It's not even about the people. It's about an entire art form. I'm talking about the death of rock and roll. It's been said for many years, in fact, it's been a common lament for decades, that rock is dead. And I think it's happened over and over and over again, but I think truly now we have put the final hats on that pile of dirt, and it really is over. And I'm really, really sad to report that. Don't get me wrong, this is not to say that rock doesn't exist, that rock and roll isn't actually still alive, but I'm saying that rock and roll as we knew it, in the 20th century at least, no longer exists in any way, shape, or form the way it was. So let's back up for a second. Let's go back to what rock and roll originally was in its inception. When we talk about artists like Elvis and the Beatles, who are largely deserving of the credit for bringing the term rock and roll to the mainstream and to the masses. You know, of course, you've got blues and jazz that came before that really brought musicianship to popular music. But really, with Elvis and the Beatles is where I like to think of the official start of the phenomenon of rock and roll. But again, not to discredit all those artists that came before. But I think it can be agreed that Elvis and the Beatles could be considered the start of rock and roll, just for argument's sake. Let's not get technical here. I'm not a music scholar, but that's where we can give rock and roll a starting point. Now, I wasn't around during that era. In fact, that was way before my time. But from what I can gather, it seems to hold true that Elvis and the Beatles really broke out of what was almost a prim and proper, strict view towards what music was at that point, that it shouldn't be loud, it shouldn't be boisterous, it shouldn't go past a certain level, figuratively speaking, literally. So I feel like Elvis and the Beatles started what rock and roll ended up evolving into, which was a sort of rebellion against a straight-laced kind of culture that seemed to dominate the 40s and 50s, which of course brought us into the 60s, which again, an era I would have loved to have experienced, but was still decades before my time. But again, from what I can gather, and from what I've heard in terms of the music, and in terms of people's accounts of that time, it must have been amazing. And that rebellion continued to evolve and mutate into an amazing explosion of musical and artistic endeavors. So the 60s, the era of free love and hippies and kind of crusading against the war, and that clash of cultures with these different music types almost making a dividing line between the different cultures. You had the Rolling Stones, you had Led Zeppelin, and suddenly rock was it. Rock and roll, and suddenly rock and roll had officially taken over the world. Through the 60s and 70s, with the likes of Black Sabbath and Jimi Hendrix, we really entered into this realm of rock and roll where it was about a few things. It was about an attitude. It was about a spirit of the music and the tone and the feel, but it was also about the musicianship, the writing, and the talent. Jimi Hendrix is representative of a spawn of rock and roll that turned into the virtuoso guitar player, as well as a representation of the frontman, which just embodied everything about rock and roll, from the sound to the look to the feel. So with all these sort of forefathers of rock and roll paving the way and setting the tone for almost the rules of, quote, rock stardom, that brought us into the 80s, which at that point, I've officially joined the fold, and it's an amazing time for music. Truly amazing. Granted, some people might say, you know, in the 80s, you had disco kind of playing itself out, and then you still had rock going strong. But everyone was in the mix, everyone was in the pool, and everyone was having a good time. And appropriately so, the birth of MTV came shortly after my birth. And I remember from my infancy being exposed to so many different musical artists that presented themselves visually. This is in addition to my household being filled with all types of music from the 50s, 60s, and 70s to the mainstream pop of the 80s. But MTV, of course, was a special kind of draw because You really got to see these artists as well as hear them and really experience something else other than just listening to the music. And so it was with that that my adolescence was dominated with these visuals and these sounds. MTV became a channel for the mainstream flow to kind of flood through. And so by the mid-80s, we're looking at all sorts of hair metal and glam rock spawned by the likes of bands like Kiss and Black Sabbath. And this was mixed, of course, with all the other genres, but really, this decade really embodied the spirit of what rock and roll was destined to become, and emphasized the entertainment value of seeing such things, these big and bold and flashy artists who are entertaining us with their presence and their behavior as well as with their music. But it should be mentioned that, of course, there's a slant to the rock and roll of the 80s. Looking at it now is very exposed and almost embarrassing at its level of male-dominated chauvinistic nature. But rather than focus on that aspect of it, I'd like to note how it transitioned and it changed, because to kind of fight that wave of completely played out and presumptuous cockiness of what rock and roll and hair metal became, along comes a band that turned it on its head and really set the tone straight, and to me, embodies what rock and roll could have and should have been, which is Guns N' Roses. I heard Guns N' Roses at 7 years old, and I was like, Guns N' Roses is it. That is what all of these bands kind of strive to be and should be in terms of attitude, in terms of songwriting, in terms of music. Their musicality was as explosive and unpredictable as their appearance, as well as their performance. Now, antics and drug use aside, they were a serious band. And if there was a definition of rock and roll, they would certainly be an important bullet point that followed somewhere along the lineage of Elvis and the Beatles. I would make a claim for that. Of course, that's arguable, and I'm biased, but hey, isn't everyone? So they were my introduction to true rock and roll, and to me, they were the pinnacle. But of course, in ending the 80s, we saw that that hair metal crowd of the Poisons and the Warrants and the Whitesnakes, suddenly it got so played out that it became a parody of itself. All the spandex-wearing, big-haired bands trying to imitate Eddie Van Halen, but trying to be as almost disgusting and salacious as possible in the process. So there weren't many bands like Guns N' Roses, but there were a lot of bands like Motley Crue. But the resilience of the rock scene proved itself in that throughout all of this and throughout all the variations in the type of rock and roll there was, something came through, and that something was songwriting. Integrity, personal and artistic integrity through the songs that were written. And so I can't end the 80s and enter the 90s without mentioning the other pinnacle of rock and roll, and personally a life-changing experience, which was my introduction to Nirvana. Nirvana turned that whole acrobatic, male-dominated guitar virtuoso parody onto its head and almost swept it out of the room. And with the slate clean, all that was left over was a group of guys that wanted to write good music and to rock out. And so this became rock and roll. The 90s became the era of alternative music and alternative rock. And then you have the bread and butter of what are my musical influences. If we start with Guns N' Roses, we go to Nirvana. And then you've got the Smashing Pumpkins, Stone Temple Pilots, Pearl Jam, even Metallica. All the alternative bands, and even some of the hard rock and heavy metal bands all felt that massive wave and surge in the 90s of being able to really ride that wave of momentum that rock and roll had. As we got further into the 90s, it kind of took a turn. And as you started seeing bands like Korn and Limp Bizkit come out, suddenly this blending and crossing of genres became a very strange fusion that at the time was popular for a very niche crowd, but a very large niche crowd. And if you were in high school, it was something that was hard to avoid, but also there was some pretty cool music at that point. It's not apples to apples to compare the rap and nu metal of the late 90s to something like the rock of either the 60s, 70s, or 80s, but I will say that it still embodied that spirit of musicianship and performance that the previous eras all had as well. And so with this new era ushered in of Rage Against the Machine and the blurring of lines between genres that used to be so cut and dry and firm in their divisions really brought rock and roll to a head. So much so that at the start of the new millennium, it was almost hard to see where it would go from there, because we had evolved to the point where now hard rock, rock and roll, heavy metal, all of these things are blurring into this giant explosion of various types of bands and offshoots of genres. And some of the bands really kind of surged through that, and others kind of fell away. Whereas you'd see a band like Tool, who started in the 90s, end up really persevering and building a huge fan base. Then you had artists like Nine Inch Nails and Trent Reznor, who, of course, is still around. But unfortunately, that wave of rock that included industrial music seemed to peak at that point and then just kind of fall away. And you started hearing less of this industrial stuff and less of the electronica mixed with rock and more of the darker hard rock heavy metal stuff. By the early 2000s, with the death of MTV, suddenly there was this switch. Suddenly there was this almost catastrophic failure in continuing the evolution of rock because of a couple things. Number one, reality TV. You know, in junior high, I watched one of the first original reality TV shows, which was MTV's Real World, which wasn't the formula of reality today, as I've explained to many students. It was literally an experiment in reality television that previously was only known as cinema verite. And with no pretense of what was going to happen and no basis to almost riff off of, this experiment of putting seven people in a house to see what would happen was truly engaging and enthralling. But what it brought with it was this spectator mentality and this voyeuristic obsession to kind of live vicariously through these cameras observing other people. And it became something that was imitated over and over and over again, so much so that these reality shows lost all of that special innocence that some of the earlier ones had, where they don't really care that they're on camera. They know that the cameras are there, but they're just living their lives and you're just watching things play out and you're seeing real life occur, in so much as real life that can be edited and broadcast to a mass audience. But it's far different from what it evolved into in the next decade, which is to say, now we have things like the Kardashians. And while I don't want to criticize the Kardashians necessarily, because I don't watch the show, the idea of keeping up with the Kardashians to me has always been puzzling because of the novelty factor involved in who these people are and why I would want to watch them in the first place. It doesn't feel the same as some of the earlier reality shows, where there seemed more to be a goal to find that human interest connection and find the connection between that fiction and reality divide when you're putting a camera on someone and it's candid. But I digress. I'm not going to criticize reality TV. That's another conversation. What reality TV brought, though, was a demystifying of people. You know, when you have cameras in everyone's faces and in their houses and you see behind the scenes and you see these testimonials and they're talking to the camera, it really gave rise to the selfie culture and this vlog culture that just wants to address everyone. I mean, come on, you're listening to a podcast and I'm talking to you right now to an audience that I cannot see yet presume might be there. But that lack of mystery, this whole behind the scenes mentality of being able to just know and see what everyone is doing all the time, and to be able to somehow look at that and put together a story or make a judgment on who these people are or what they do, it was just the demystifying of all of it. And this went along with this whole rise of the bubblegum pop mainstream. And it's no coincidence that with our nostalgia that we kind of resurrected the boy bands in this era, and the Britney Spears and the Christina Aguileras all started coming out, and the Justin Biebers, where it all meshed into this strange, self-referencing, nostalgic look at previous decades, but with this weird focus on the all-seeing, all-knowing eye of today. So where previously our artists were reflecting on culture and society in their art, and especially regarding music, they had stories to tell, those weren't available anywhere else. And if you wanted to know the artist, you listened to their music. It transitioned into this free-for-all where everyone was out there and everyone's trying to say everything to everyone and be everything to everyone and be everywhere. MTV was dead, no more music videos because you have the internet and everything's on the internet and everyone's on the internet, and the democratic nature of the internet made it so that it was harder to pay attention to or focus on certain artists or individuals because now everyone has an equal chance to be seen and to do that. I feel like at a certain point in the early 2000s, we all really truly wanted to reach Nirvana. And I mean that figuratively, but as well as literally, not just the term Nirvana, of achieving just ultimate peace and finding bliss, because we had a lot of things happen, as you know, in the early 2000s. And there was a lot of questioning of where we were going and what we were headed for, not just in music, but in the world. The rise of the YouTube star and the reality star in that period was just another step in taking away the mystery of the artists that we listened to and watched and loved for many, many decades, because there's a new sphere of influence and connection that we have with the internet. Now, the old codger in me, the musician in me, the kid in me who played guitar until his fingers bled in his bedroom and tried to learn as many songs as he could and played in lots of bands, that kid in me looks at what happened in that period and what's continued to happen and is critical of things like the amount of talent, the amount of dedication, the amount of hard work involved in getting on the internet and then suddenly becoming famous because of what you've done. There's something about that, that instant gratification that is seemingly lacking in all the previous decades and all the other artists that came before, that while may have the same attitude of rock and roll and rebellion and may even have the same artistic integrity to an extent, but there were things that were missing. Some things were great to be missing, that lack of posturing, the death of the front man, as some people have said, because of the roles of genders changing and the fact that, yeah, we don't have to do this male-dominated, shaking your hips, AC/DC, always talking about girls, ZZ Top, like sexist kind of stuff anymore. And while we can still look at that era and kind of tongue-in-cheek roll our eyes at it, it's definitely not something that's embodied today. But I think the clincher is that, as hinted in the late 90s with rap metal and bands like Rage Against the Machine, the rise of hip-hop culture really embodied the remnants of all of these things in rock and roll. That same attitude, but obviously from a different place. And I'll freely admit, I love that era and I love a lot of that music. Hell, I played in rap metal bands. It was fun. But it's almost looked at in the same way someone who said, yeah, I used to listen to disco and I used to wear bell bottoms. I feel like it's equated with that kind of almost embarrassment or shame. But I have no shame in it because to me it was all rock and roll, whether I was playing in alternative bands or rap metal bands or what have you. It was all rock and roll because, again, it's about the attitude, it's about the integrity, and it's about the music. But with the death of MTV, the death of our attention span with the internet, it seemed like that also was concurrent with the death of writing and the death of quality. With things like YouTube out there, it's hard not to equate what we see in mainstream culture as far as music and movies as just a content factory. All of these just aiming to produce more imitations of what came before. Pale imitations, I might add. And this goes to TV, movies, music. When you make a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox, it's gonna further distort what the original one was. So if I were a pessimist, I'd say that was the death of artistry and honesty, because with the internet, we've come to embrace the instant gratification and fame that these new channels and these new ways of reaching audiences suddenly offered. I'll be honest, I don't listen to new music much nowadays. I'm in a different headspace, whereas I was always looking out for the next new thing at some point in my life. In my 20s, I've really lost the taste for what's coming out and what's even here now, because it's just not my flavor and it doesn't connect with me. Maybe that's me, because other people seem to be into it. Maybe I was just more receptive to music at a different point in my life, and now I can just stick to that and I can always go back to those artists and those records and re-experience those and find my connection with them all the way back from when I sat in my bedroom to now. But the new ones just don't meet the criteria. They don't grab me the way music of previous eras did. And at this point, I'm not sure whether or not that's me or that's them. But what I can definitely say is that if you watch Saturday Night Live and you watch the musical guests for the past 2 or 3 years, you will note a difference in the quality of musicianship and artistic integrity from watching the musical guests of the 90s. There is a true difference. And I'm not sure what it is about Saturday Night Live and how they cast and book these artists and these groups. And maybe I'm just out of touch, but for the most part, I don't recognize the artists that play on that stage. Whereas every week in the 80s and 90s, the musical guest was someone you knew, and they had a foothold in music, in whatever genre they played in. And it was amazing to see them. It was exciting. And even if it was a band I didn't know, when they took the stage, you were excited to see them do what they do because they were really good at it. Even if it wasn't my style or genre of music, there was a certain amount of respect and attention paid to look at these people doing something that they worked so hard at and that they put everything into because they had to learn either how to write, how to play, and then focus on a band dynamic and playing with each other. The bands themselves had a personality as a whole in addition to the individual members. It was like watching a movie with an all-star cast and going, wow, look at how all these artists play off of each other and work together and bring us this piece of art. I don't know why exactly that's missing in today's music. But it's embodied in the artists I see on Saturday Night Live during the musical performances. Everything seems staged. Everything seems like another sketch. Everything seems like a parody of something that came before, and it's embarrassing. It's not that I see it and I go, oh, this is awful music. I may have my opinion on that, but that's always subjective. But when I watch it just on the surface to try and go, okay, will I be entertained by this artist because they have something to bring to their craft? I don't often see that. So it makes me shudder to watch what is considered rock today because it is a very, very strange time and a very, very pale version of a copy of a copy of a copy. That's even saying too much because music has turned to music, S-I-C-K. I instantly kind of get sick when I see or hear some of the music that's out there. And I'll just talk specifically about rock because it doesn't seem to exist. There are no more guitar heroes, which actually stands to say that people aren't dedicating themselves to an instrument and really learning their craft and really learning how to express themselves through it. But here I am complaining where I kind of said I wouldn't complain because really it is a matter of perspective and opinion. But I think one thing can be said objectively that there aren't a lot of rock bands out there anymore. And there's certainly not enough rock bands to keep rock and roll alive. You know, bands like the Foo Fighters and some of these bands will always be there. But unfortunately, there just isn't anything necessarily known as rock and roll in any way, shape, or form that it used to be. But the good news is that it probably does exist, not just in the hearts and minds of the fans, but in the basements and bedrooms of people who are hopefully having that experience of discovering music and maybe even discovering an instrument and discovering writing and connecting with all sorts of music. Sad part is that it's just no longer really in the mainstream, which maybe is where it should be. It's never going to be like the 60s, 70s, or 80s again. These eras have been cemented as authentic, but unfortunately, the era of rock is also cemented. Really, rock and roll is forever going to be a state of mind. So rather than look at it as a severe lack and even degradation in the quality of the music and the performers that are being developed and coming out today, I'd rather just say that it is where it always has been in our heads, as far as our attitudes. Now, it's debatable whether or not you could consider hip hop to be rock and roll, as contradictory as that sounds. But at the same time, recently, there's been some debate over hip hop artists winning best rock artist. And I'm not going to get into that. However, I will say that there is a shared attitude, that attitude of rebellion and standing up for yourself, what you believe, your experience, or your culture. More specifically, though, to me, rock and roll was an attitude mixed with talent, hard work, and having something to say. And you take all these things and it was in the way it was said. Now again, hip-hop dominates the entire music industry now. It's basically all there is. But I can't help but think that there's something truly special about songwriting and instrumentation, which is not to say that lyrics don't take skill. You know, the likes of Eminem have immense talents in terms of verbal abilities and language abilities to be able to really create some of the flows and the rhymes that come from that style of hip hop. But it seems, though, that along with that talent and even overshadowing that talent ends up being this image and these personas that seem to be shoved in front of the music as though that's what we should be paying attention to. And all too often, it really is just a facade. But to me, it's bigger than an image. When I think about rock and roll, in comparison to what has happened to music overall, it's like comparing a bronze sculpture to a sketch on a napkin. It just doesn't compare. The depth is lacking while the image might be there. It's a novel versus a text message. And so it's just my hope that in bedrooms and garages across the country, across the world, people are rediscovering instruments again and rediscovering the roots of what could become real rock and roll. So is rock dead? I don't know, maybe. But if you're anything like me, you take some kind of amusement and even some joy in knowing that sometimes things that were meant to stay dead don't stay dead for long.